The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Migrants tried to board a school bus this morning while it was traveling to a school. The superintendent for the Jamul del Zora Union School District informed parents of that incident earlier today. It happened at one of the stops on the school district's bus route that heads to Oak Grove Middle School and Jamul Primary. Meanwhile, yesterday afternoon, in a similar area along another route, the superintendent says that a group of migrants tried to stop another bus. Border Patrol, CHP, and the sheriff's office have now been informed of these incidents. The superintendent says that for the safety of everyone, if a driver sees a group of migrants at a bus stop, they will drive past it on and move on to the next.
The Venezuelans is taking over.
Oh, they just jacked
them. They done made a mess. Oh, we almost just got hit.
Is this the fault of the apartment management company, or is this the work of Venezuelan gangs? New information this morning, Aurora Police teaming up with the CBI and the Colorado State Patrol to better address concerns about the violent Venezuelan gangs. Investigators believe some members are from Venezuela, gangs responsible for this jewelry store heist we brought to you. This happened in Denver earlier in summer. All three agencies now creating a task force which will allow them to maximize resources and share intelligence about the ongoing investigations. Mayor Mike Kaufman saying, and they've been talking about it for a while now, one of their initial goals is to engage and learn from the migrant community.
We're also aggressively, having a presence in these pockets where there's concentrations of Venezuelan migrants to be able to try to ourselves, or at least our law enforcement personnel at the local, state, and federal levels to identify who these bad actors are and get them off the street.
Kaufman also saying he can't share too much about what the task force is going to be doing. He didn't want to compromise the investigation. He believes allocating resources is necessary and wants people to know he and police are taking it seriously.
A Kingston man has pleaded guilty to sexually abusing a 7-year-old girl. The Ulster County DA says 41-year-old Carlos Fernando Pinola Pop had sexual contact with the girl last September. He confessed when he was arrested a month later. He faces up to 7 years in prison and will register as a sex offender. He may be deported afterwards since he's undocumented.
Repeat after me. There is no migrant crime wave. There is no migrant crime wave. Got it? They know. They know there's a wave of crime. That's why Kamala's copying Donald Trump's policy on the border. Now, as I covered yesterday, now she's prepared to build a wall. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Go to Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. If you go to Rumble, give us the thumbs up, please, and also leave a nice comment. You can also email the show at TD@TheTrumpet.com. Lots and lots to get to on today's show. Sam and I thought it was interesting. This guy, I don't remember his Twitter handle, but he tweets out a picture of Deuteronomy 28, and he highlights there verses 43 and 45, or 44, sorry. What made me just skip a number? 43 and 44. I'm not sure what the translation is here. I can give you the King James in a moment, but it says, "Foreigners who live in your land will gain more and more power while you gradually lose yours." Verse 44, they will have money to lend you, but you will have none to lend them. In the end, they will be your rulers. In the end, the foreigners that you invite in will rule you. I mean, this guy who tweeted this, he's got 1.4 million followers. So, I mean, good for him. The blessings and cursings chapter, Deuteronomy 28, Leviticus 26, it's talked about at length in the United States and Britain in prophecy. More people should be referring to these passages of Scripture. I mean, if you want to do a deep dive into this study, make sure you call our operators and request this masterful text on Bible prophecy. A third of your Bible is prophecy, and prophecies are being fulfilled. I was telling the freshman Bible class this morning, Deuteronomy's it's written, Moses wrote it, so how long ago was it? 3,000-4,000 years ago. And you see just how accurate God's forecast is. It's never out of date. The Bible is never dated. It applies to today more than any other time period, in fact. It's most of the prophecies in the Bible are for the last days. These are the days we're living in right now. And except for a few, like this guy at that Twitter handle, whatever it is, most just dismiss it. They don't even look at it. They don't even acknowledge that we're living in the last days. They don't believe in the second coming of Jesus Christ. They're not turning to God in repentance. That's really what these prophecies should motivate us to do, to actually ask like Paul asked on the way to Damascus, Lord, what would you have me to do? I've been fighting against you. Or in the case of Deuteronomy 28, what should we do? There's all these curses. We're being buried by curses. Well, repentance, faith, looking to Jesus Christ as the way, the truth, the life. He'll show us the way out of this. He'll show us how to be made right before God. He'll reconcile us to the Father. His death has done that. If we'll just claim that sacrifice in faith and look to God and turn our hearts to Him, as I was saying in the forum this morning for all of the college students, it's great that you're getting this wonderful education. You're taking down all these notes. You're trying to commit as much of it to memory as you can so that you can score well on a quiz or a test. But the key to true education is putting these words into action, living this way of life, living it, so much so that your heart is set on it, your mind is set on the things above, like Paul said in Colossians 3. There's purity and righteousness, even in our thoughts. It's so easy to veer off course, and I mean, we see example after example today of even leading people that are just so far off in their thinking. We expose as much of that as we can on this show. You think about the shift toward MAGA policies, as I mentioned. And the reason for that is because these Marxist radicals, they know if they give their communist goals straight up, they know they're going to be dreadfully unpopular. And so now here we're actually watching Kamala and company cherry pick some of the things that Donald Trump's been talking about for years and years and years. And evidently, the radical left is just fine with that. She was mocking the idea of a border wall for years. She said there's no problem at the border. For years she said this. She was the border czar. And here on CNN this morning, they're covering for her still. Saying that, well, she never was really the border czar. She was more over the triangle nations in Central America. No, she was the border czar. She was put in charge of the border crisis. and to see them lying now or embracing policies that you would think the radical left would be up in arms over. No, no, we don't want you to go toward MAGA. What are you doing? What if Donald Trump suddenly announced, you know what, I'm no longer for building a wall. I'm gonna leave the border wide open. How do you think his followers would feel about that? The radical left, I mean, they will say anything to try to maintain their hold on power, as we've said over and over again. This is from Vox. The nominee is pivoting hard to the right on immigration. So why do progressives say they can live with it? So our following, I guess, is pivoting too. No problem. No problem. It says here, while humanitarianism, openness to migrants, and rolling back restrictive Trump-era policies used to be the Democratic focus, Democrats are locked in on stopping the flow of migrants, limiting asylum, and funding more border patrol operations. So does that mean Trump was right? They would never say that, of course. But hey, they can see, no matter the regime media, constantly saying, hey, there's no crime wave. There's no migrant crime wave. No, no. Everything's perfect. Well, they can't very well say that anymore because of all these local reports in New York, the one in Colorado. I mean, the bus drivers are having to go by bus stops if they see migrants. What is happening? That the opening of that cold open, that was actually from the UK. 50 migrants from Africa that nearly beat this 15-year-old white girl to death. This British student, a high schooler. They nearly beat her to death. You saw the mob there. They have the same problem in Britain. They're going after the meme makers. They're clearing out prison cells to put meme makers in jail. Meanwhile, I guess a mob of 50 migrants just pummeling this girl to death nearly. I guess that's just, you know, another day in Britain. No big deal. It says here that's partially out of a need to appeal to moderate swing and independent voters. So it's all political. Kamala's flip-flop. It's political. You know she's not going to follow through with it. You know she doesn't want a border wall. She's campaigned on that in the past. What's in her heart? We'll talk about the heart here in just a minute. Forgive me for having my focus on that, because that's what I spoke about this morning. Their heart is set on fundamental transformation. And we were on it from the beginning. From 2008 to this point. Then America Under Attack comes out in 2013. I mean, we took them at their word. And the transformation continues. It's been so thorough and complete that now, you know, bus drivers are having to drive by pickups for children because migrants are around. Okay. And then the one law enforcement official that says, we're trying to engage and learn from the migrant community. Okay, we'll see how that goes for you. Trying to understand the minds of criminal gangs from Venezuela. They'll try to understand the hearts of these hardened criminals. And then they're totally deceived about their own heart. Vox says presidential candidates pivoting to the middle on key issues ahead of a general election is unsurprising. Well, what is surprising is that on immigration, the Harris campaign is doing so without facing much opposition from liberal politicians, progressive activists, or even longtime pro-immigrant advocacy groups. The radical left, as I say, they're on board with it. She's got to flip-flop on some policies here because, well, there just wasn't the bounce that they were expecting following the convention last week. You know, the hope and change. Well, that's Obama, I guess. But I guess now it's joy and vibes. The same platitudes. It just feels good. It was so, I was there. I felt the vibes. She's going to be a great president. A lot of people aren't feeling it. So they won't say. I mean, they're still out there pretending. Hey, you know, Berman on CNN. Say, now, she wasn't the border czar. He's quick to correct the Trump spokesman. She was the border czar. He was fact-checked in real time. But he's also there. He's convinced because he listens to Scarborough. He listens to Rachel Maddow. He's convinced that Kamala's way out front now because of the vibes. Because of all the joy. Such a positive message. The truth of it is, she didn't get the bounce. So now she's embracing MAGA policies. There you go. Listen to Jesse from last night, clip 6.
The jump for joy could be heading back to earth, the Wall Street Journal says. Quote, many inside the Harris camp believe they can ride the magic carpet of left-leaning media bias. But Cinderella stories get stale fast in our social media-driven, short attention span world. And when they do, the media looks quickly for the counter-narrative. The worm always turns. When it does, no reporter wants to be left behind. Reporters are worrying because the DNC didn't move the needle. Morning Consult, Harris gets no boost from Democratic convention. YouGov poll, no bounce for Harris. Street vendors in New York City say they can't sell Kamala hats.
So I see you have a Trump hat, but there's no Kamala hat. Where do you get the hats from, and why only Trump?
Yeah. Porque las gorras de Kamala no se venden tanto como las de Trump, y only for the business.
So the Trump hats sell more in New York?
Yeah. The people buy more Trump hats.
MAGA hats are selling in Manhattan, but Kamala merch is collecting dust? Well, it makes sense because Kamala can't even sell herself.
That's pretty funny. The Spanish-speaking street vendor in Manhattan, he's out there selling Trump hats, of all things. No Kamala merchandise. She can't even sell herself. She's doing the big sit-down this evening. The interview. The much-anticipated interview. After 40 days! And she's got to do it with Tiananmen Tim. She's got to do it with the vice president. Her VP pick. You've got Doug Murray on Sky News in Australia saying they've got to do it together because they don't even know what their policies are. If they did it separately, you'd have two sets of agendas. But at least there, I mean, even if they disagree to some extent, they can kind of sound like they're together. They're unified. No one-on-one, though. Not even with Dana Bash, of all things. She is going to tee up the biggest softball questions that you could ever imagine. And Kamala still can't venture very far away from her handlers, from her VP pick. This is also from Jesse last night, clip 7.
And where'd the crowds go? Same thing happened in 2019. She made a big splashy entrance, huge crowds, adoring media. And once voters focused on her, she fizzled out. We're watching the fizzle. Kamala peaked last week and hasn't won a single news cycle since RFK endorsed Trump. She's getting cooked by Republicans, and the media can't defend her because they don't know what she believes, and neither does the Harris campaign.
He's exactly right. He's exactly right. Miranda Devine, she was on Fox, I believe, too, making the point that if she can't even do a solo interview, I mean, how much confidence could you have in her to sit across the table with some of the tyrants and dictators that we see in the world today? Here's Devine from last night, clip 3.
Kamala Harris sitting with CNN's Dana Bash for a PK interview alongside her running mate, Tim Walz. It's the first interview Harris has done in 40 days since taking the top spot in the Democrat ticket. You've been very vocal about this on X, Miranda. You write that CNN should not have even accepted any of these terms. Tell us more. What are the terms that are most troublesome?
Well, look, as you say, we had to wait 40 days until Kamala Harris finally mustered the courage to do a formal sit-down interview. And then what does she do? She ends up wimping out and bringing along her wingman, Tim Walz, so that he can, I mean, he can talk underwater with a mouthful of marbles. So he will fill in any gaps and any flubs by her. When she starts with her word salad, he'll rescue her. She'll have half the amount of time to talk. And then there's the fact that this is a pre-recorded interview, as you said. So that allows the campaign to put pressure on CNN to maybe edit anything out that's embarrassing. And it also allows them to do redos if she's, Kamala Harris is not comfortable. You know, yeah. I don't know how someone who wants to be commander-in-chief is going to handle really difficult decisions that a president has to make when she's agonized, we hear, for days over just how to do this interview and who to give it to, and she can't even do it by herself. I don't know how she's going to sit across the table from Vladimir Putin or President Xi if she's so weak and so cowardly.
Leo Terrell on Fox said that in order to even get the CNN interview or to get the interview with Kamala alongside Tim Walz, they would have had to submit to the DNC requirements, like, at, you know, getting the questions ahead of time, being able to edit things after the fact. Because they have to, I mean, they have to carefully construct this narrative or keep it intact. Victor Davis Hanson gave a long list of how they've remade this woman into a complete and totally new candidate. She's fake and phony. I mean, everyone sees it. Everyone. CNN knows they've got to play along. They've got to make sure it's carefully edited. These were the requirements. Does that inspire confidence? Maria, you just saw there on, I think, Fox Business this morning, she was talking just about the communication abilities or lack thereof of Kamala Harris and why she steers clear of the interviews. But I think what's interesting about this clip, this next one, is that she quotes from the New York Times, who's, again, solidly in her camp, Kamala's camp. This is clip 13.
Candidates hitting the campaign trail today. President Trump back in Michigan, while the Harris team will be in Savannah, Georgia. That's where she'll sit down for her first media interview since Biden dropped out of the race now 40 days ago. Though she's been hounded for a solo appearance, she is sitting with CNN's Dana Bash right alongside her running mate, Tim Walz. This is where we're getting a sneak peek into what it's like to interview the vice president. The New York Times asked one of its reporters to describe the process from the two times she spoke with Kamala Harris, describing it as arduous. Quote, I was trying to sift through platitudes to try and find a specific vision of a story that she was telling about herself because it really wasn't clear.
What? I was trying to sift through platitudes? I couldn't even understand it? This woman's running for the president of the United States of America. And New York Times journalists are acknowledging she's just not clear. I don't understand what she's saying. I mean, is this really happening? Is Berman and Scarborough and Maddow, are they really pushing this candidate forward? In some ways, this is worse than the fake president who was going senile. This woman is for real. And evidently she's running away with it. She's crushing it. Listen to her. Yesterday, they stop at a school. I don't know how old these students are. I spoke before a lot of students this morning myself, so I'm familiar with this kind of a setting. I do it often. Watch this woman, watch, and just ask yourself, who talks like this? Who communicates this way with young people? And what must the young people be thinking as they're sitting there listening to these platitudes? That's what they are. And trying to figure out what does she mean? What's she getting at here? This is clip 5.
All of you, you are leaders. By the very fact that you all are here in this room, doing what you do at this incredible school, doing it as one big team, understanding all of the different parts that fit together to create a team. You are doing some of the best work any leader can do. And we're so proud of you. We will count on you. Your generation, all that you guys stand for, everything you have at stake, is what is going to propel our country into the next era of what we can do and what we can be. And all that you all are doing, it requires a whole lot of rehearsal, a whole lot of practice, long hours, right? Sometimes you hit the note, sometimes you don't, right? But all that practice makes for beautiful music. And that is a metaphor, that is symbolic for everything that you all will do in your lives, which is you're going to show what a winning team looks like. You're going to show what it means to put yourself out on the field, to put yourself in front of people, to have the confidence to do it. Sometimes you're going to hit the step right. Sometimes you're not. Sometimes you're going to win the game. Sometimes you may not. But you know, you never let any circumstance knock you down or slow you down. You just keep going at it. That's who you are. And that's why we are so confident in everything that you are doing and will continue to do for our country. So just keep being you and all of the excellence that you're bringing to everything you do. Okay? All right. See you later.
No wonder she doesn't want to do an interview. Just, you know, because you're in this room. You're leaders. You're propelling us to the next era. You're just keep being you. I wonder how that would have went over with our college students this morning. Well, waltzing into the forum room and saying, look, nothing much to talk about here. Just keep being you. Keep doing what you're doing. That's not the message they generally get. There's certainly a steady diet of different things, encouragement and praise and also direction, a lot of direction, a lot of you need to change this in your thinking to become more like Christ. How far removed are we? The thing that I appreciated more this morning with the Bible studies I was preparing, but then also seeing that tweet from that guy quoting those two verses in Deuteronomy 28, and then hearing that speech, that word salad, those endless platitudes, the fluff, there's nothing concrete there. There's nothing there. Okay, so maybe I'm being a little too hard on her. She's just passing by. She's saying hi. She doesn't know these students. But she's running for president of the United States. It's not exactly Churchillian. Let's just put it that way. Now, think about you have a guy tweeting out these two verses in Deuteronomy 28. Think about what it says in Isaiah 3 about God taking away as part of the curses. It's not just the strangers and coming in and having power over you. It also says in Isaiah 3 that God's going to take away the leaders, real solid leadership, the eloquent orator. It says there in that passage, the counselors, the wise counselors. It's easy to look at a word salad and just kind of laugh and joke about it. But the Bible says, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So what's going on the inside? How about the confusion or the lack of clarity that's there on the inside? That's dangerous. You don't turn over the reins of government, the United States of America, to someone that has no clue what's going on or what policy she should embrace or how she should converse with a journalist. It's just, look, try to stir up the impression that there's really good vibes, that the speech she gave last Thursday was the best in the history of conventions, political conventions, that there's just joy running over. I read this verse to the the students this morning. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 5. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. God wants us to worship him wholeheartedly, to just pour our hearts into it. And when we do, when we set our hearts on God and the things of God, then that's what's going to pour forth from our hearts. Like I said, all those things this morning kind of converged together, and I thought, wow, Moses, as he was inspired to write it there in Deuteronomy 28, he was right. God is always right. He's always clear. There's a simplicity to his message. You have to dig a little bit. We're studying the book of Galatians right now and epistles of Paul. And I mean, it's you have to dig in to get to the meat of what Paul's talking about there. It does require study. I'm not saying that you can just read it immediately. Everything's just as clear as day. But there's a simplicity to God's truth. You have to work to put the puzzle pieces together, like the prophet Isaiah says, here a little, there a little. But when you do, the rewards are out of this world. They're spectacular. As God begins to open your mind to the truth of his prophecies, of the Psalms, of the writings of the prophets, the Christian living content, the commandments, the statutes, the judgments, to say nothing of the storyline itself, as I've said multiple times this semester already. How could a Hollywood producer, given the drama in Acts 7, 8, 9, just to take one example, Paul was right there with the crowd stoning Stephen. And then he's on the way to Damascus, and what a dramatic, miraculous turnaround. His conversion to the truth. And then he went on to serve God. He was a zealot, a spiritual zealot for God. I mean, that's a pretty exciting movie script right there, but Hollywood's not interested in that because it's the Bible. The Bible should be rejected. You shouldn't tweet pages from the Bible out. I mean, it's an old book. It's outdated. It doesn't apply to our time today, does it? Proverbs 23, verse 26 says, "My son, give me your heart and let your eyes observe my ways." Well, that's a beautiful verse. There's a simplicity in that message. What does God want from you? What does God want from us? He wants us to give our hearts to him, our lives, our being, our everything. He wants us to serve him with reverence and fear all the day long, as this same proverb or this same chapter says, from start to finish. Mr. Armstrong once wrote, "God's work is a work of giving the gospel of the kingdom of God. In 40 years, I've observed that only those whose hearts are in this great work are themselves growing spiritually." It's so easy in this day and age to be half-hearted. You see it in the political realm every day. People that are half-hearted, or they flip-flop, or they lie and deceive. They say one thing, they get the soundbite that they need to support their re-election campaign, but then as soon as they're re-elected, they go right back to lying. They go right back to being weak. They go right back to the steady diet of platitudes, smooth-sounding things, that when you try to understand, there's really no clarity there. There's no continuity there. There's no real message. It's just fluff. Mr. Armstrong once made the point about how how God speaks, and we've got his message recorded in print, and how your typical expert in today's world speaks. I mean, with God, you know where he stands. You know exactly where he stands. And it's so refreshing. Just back up to verse 4. It says, "Labor not to be rich. Cease from your own wisdom." Reason, in other words, reason together with God. Stay away from your own carnal reasoning. and really dig in and see what God says. There's another proverb that says, the thought of foolishness is sin. And as I was saying to the students this morning, I mean, we're just so close to sin all the time because it's so easy for our thoughts to just drift into foolishness or worse. Verse 7, listen to this verse. It says, for as he thinks in his heart, so is he. I mean, this is one of the great verses of the Bible. What goes in is what will come out eventually. What we're feeding our minds with is what will eventually show itself in our spoken words and in the way we live. The students in the freshman Bible, they're going through Professor Bloom, the late Professor Bloom's book, The Closing of the American Mind. And Bloom, he wrote this back in the late 80s. He's talking about all the influences that used to be there for young people when they were coming into, you know, Harvard or wherever in the 1940s or 50s, and how that there was a Christian ethic, a Judeo-Christian ethic for the most part. Families back then still read from the Bible. They enjoyed reading. On top of that, I mean, just keeping up with the news, they were more informed. They were bookish. They were more adjusted socially, better adjusted socially. And then Bloom says, boy, you know, you get to the 60s or the 70s of the last century, and what happened? And now it's music, entertainment, movies. That's what so many young people, that's what so many adults are filling their minds with. And so when they talk, you know, out comes filth, or out comes the nonsense, or out comes a muddled message lacking any clarity. We see plenty of that in the world today. This list from Victor Davis Hanson, the complete Kamala Harris makeover requires 15 radical rules. I don't know if I'll go through all these. Remake Harris as an entirely fresh, happy face. She's about joy and a vibe, which trumps position papers and policy statements. Who needs policies, really? Who needs to sit down with a reporter and talk about policies when you've got vibes, man? You've got the vibes. Number two, ignore, deny that Harris as vice president could have long ago enacted her new makeover proposal or could do so right now in the remaining 5 months of her administration's tenure. She was the last person out of the room when Biden made those awful decisions, pulling out of Afghanistan, and on it goes. She was right there all through it all. But now we're to believe she's totally different. She's new and improved. Number three, for the next 70 days, reinvent Harris as a moderate. Xerox much of Donald Trump's current more popular agenda. Have Harris claim it as her own. Reboot her as a border hawk, a China hawk, a defense hawk, a budget hawk, and a law and order hawk. She's tough on crime. Number four, the word salad Harris must not do a single unscripted media interview, live town hall, extemporaneous chat, ambush hot mic, or lecture without a teleprompter. It's all got to be fake. If you're going to convince the general public that this is new and improved, that she's an eloquent orator, Victor Davis says, Harris must not offer any policy proposals such as her harebrained price controls that deviate from her 70-day new centrist image and teleprompted scripts. He says, number six, do not mention Joe Biden at all. Harris is not to be seen with him in photos or at events. Create a vaguely joyful but completely imaginary Harris record. Separate it from the miserable Biden-Harris administration. Leak that she was unhappy with Biden. Make it, now you can see, she can create some distance from Biden. That's okay. She wasn't really the vice president. I mean, she was kind of iced out. Remember that quote? She was iced out. And now she's got something new. to offer. Well, I could go on and on. I want to get to some of this from the FBI. FBI finally speaks yesterday. I mean, this really fits right in, too, because, again, if it's your FBI and they finally give the much-anticipated press conference. Since July 13th, the FBI has been pulling a Kamala. No interviews, no statements. We're investigating what happened on the day of July 13. We're investigating the motive behind Crux. We're looking into everything. We're turning over every stone. And so yesterday, they finally have the press conference. They finally make a statement. And what did they reveal? Nothing. Nothing. A few detail, picture of the gun, picture of the trunk where some of the explosives were sitting. And that's about it. That's about it. No motives. Certainly not. No. Just like with the Vegas shooter, we're just not going to be able to find any motivation behind this at all. It's not about get Trump. It's not about hate Trump. It's not about a radical left-wing Democrat or anything like that. And it certainly wasn't brought on by this nonstop tirade against Donald Trump that he's Hitler, that he has to be eliminated. There's nothing is connected to all of that angry, deranged rhetoric from the past 9 years. So, hey, press conference is over. We're your FBI, and we'll carry on with our investigation. This is all happening in the United States of America. Sundance says, I'm not surprised, I'm just angry. According to Kevin Rojek, the head of the FBI's Pittsburgh field office, leading the investigation into the attempted assassination of President Trump, Matthew Crux acted alone, no conspirators, and the FBI has no idea what his motive was. So we're at what, August 29th? Happened on July 13th? So we're 7 weeks on? Nothing. Sundance says, according to the representative for the best men the Federal Bureau of Investigation has, Crooks might have been a leftist or a far-right extremist. I mean, it could have been. It's kind of like, it's Comey-esque, isn't it? Well, it could have been this, and it could have been that. Okay, Comey used to say, maybe it didn't happen, but it could have happened. It might have happened. We don't know exactly if it did happen, but it might have, or it could have. That's Kamala-esque. No substance, nothing concrete, no details, no important ones anyway. Just a lot of fluff. Just a word salad. Makes you appreciate God's mind, doesn't it? Doesn't it make you appreciate the simplicity of the Holy Scriptures? Doesn't it make you appreciate just how emphatic God often is, how clear He is? You know right where He stands. You know what the truth is right away. That doesn't mean we always accept it. In fact, a lot of times we resist against it. We try going our own way. We try everything except for God's way. That's been the way of man. Herbert Armstrong talks about that in The Missing Dimension in Sex. First, man, even scholarly men, they reject God's revelation. It doesn't even count. It's not even factored in. Then they use observation, then they use experimentation, and then they use human reasoning. They won't reason with God. But we have humanly reasoned our way to where we are right now. And the world is about to explode because of it. It shows how much we need the revelation from God. I mean, just look at the recent examples. I talked about health the other day. The conspiracy against the physical health of Americans. Look at what they did in 2020. And then the rush to get this vaccine done. It's refreshing when you just have one voice like RFK coming out saying, no, it's poison. And there's a lot of poisons that they're putting into our foods to make them more addictive. And those foods are killing us. But don't worry, we've also got some drugs you can take to try to extend your pitiful life, your sickly life. What a system. I look forward to the time that's described in the wonderful world tomorrow, what it will be like. Herbert Armstrong has a lot to say there about physical health even. What will it be like in the world? Do you think there's going to be big pharma in the world tomorrow? Do you think we're going to have the Department of Education, the sprawling network set across Washington, D.C., that just pumps money into all these special interest groups, pays off cronies, etc., etc.? Or will the educators of tomorrow actually educate and teach? That's what this world needs. God's leaders, God's teachers. That's what we're here in God's church preparing for. The whole point of an FBI press conference, in the case of yesterday's, is to conceal the truth, to cover up the truth. They're doing a pretty good job of it. It says here, what the FBI does know is that no one taught or helped crooks make complicated explosives, and they're sure that he acted alone. For some mysterious reason, that culminated in a bullet passing through the top of President Trump's right ear. The pretending that permeates the FBI is infuriating to me. It is almost difficult to write or share this stuff. I mean, it's just nauseating. And Sundance says it's hard for me to even write about this. To talk about all this pretending, all this fakery, all this phoniness. Isaiah 3. Read Isaiah 3, verses 1 through 3, and see what God has taken away. And then look around. Look around at the leaders of today. There's a few exceptions. You know, you do have to appreciate Donald Trump's plainness of speech. If Jesus comes back, I would win. If he was counting ballots, I'd win California. There's some humor in that, and also some simplicity. If it were just honest. If it were just free and fair. Now that's a simple message. Even I can understand that one. Fox News, Trump assassination attempt. FBI reveals first photos of Thomas Crooks' firearm, IEDs, and car trunk. Finally got to see the photos. We couldn't get to that, 7 weeks ago. I mean, on this show, we were asking about the weapon. We were asking about the casings for the bullets. Why is it just trickling out? And why is it taking so long? It's just a picture. It's the gun that was used, and then now the photo is revealed. Where was the photo 7 weeks ago? What about July 15th, the Monday after the assassination attempt? Is that too much to ask? Evidently so. Evidently so. You see the spirit of John 8 and verse 44. Everywhere, the spirit of lies, the spirit of hatred, the spirit of murder even. Who's the father of it all? That would be the devil. This says here, the FBI on Wednesday, well, some of the same details that Sundance brought out over at Conservative Treehouse. This is from the FBI. No definitive ideology, either left-leaning or right-leaning. We just can't know. They've scoured through all of his social media posts, his footprint. They just can't figure it out. Just like with the Vegas shooter. The worst, most horrific mass shooting in the history of America. Las Vegas. 2017, I think it was. Don't know anything about the guy. Don't know anything about Crooks. Everybody in the neighborhood, they knew each other, but they didn't know anything about the Crooks family. And evidently, the Scarboroughs aren't interested in trying to find that out either. So on we go. And finally, Finally, we get the Kamala interview. The Kamala sit down. She's with Walz, but still. There's going to be a lot of joy. CNN will edit that in somehow. I mean, come on. There's going to be a lot of really good vibes. Play Jesse Waters from last night, clip 9.
You know, when this happened, people would ask, whose fault is it? I think to a certain extent, it's Biden's fault and Harris's fault. And I'm the opponent. Look, they were weaponizing government against me. They brought in the whole DOJ to try and get me. They weren't too interested in my health and safety. I would be if I were in their position, but they weren't very interested. But they were always making it, from what I understood, and I could feel it. They were making it very difficult to have proper staffing in terms of Secret Service.
Donald Trump has not gone this far, Congressman, in placing the blame of the assassination attempt squarely on the shoulders of Biden-Harris. The fact that he's doing that now, what does that suggest?
Well, hey, Jesse, thanks for having me. You know, I have to agree with the president. You can only call somebody a white supremacist and a threat to democracy so many times before somebody in America tries to do something about it.
I mean, you can basically count on one hand the number of commentators that are even interested in getting to the bottom of this. They tried to assassinate Donald Trump. Probably the most significant thing to come out of the FBI revelations yesterday. There weren't very many, but his search history online, crooks. This is from Headline USA. Crooks also reportedly had a July 5th search. So this would have been a week before the assassination attempt. A July 5 search for when is the DNC convention and when is the RNC in 2024. Other searches, according to the Post, included where will Trump speak from at Butler? Butler Farm Show podium. He searched for Butler Farm Show photos. He searched for detonating cord. He searched for blasting cap. How do you make a bomb from fertilizer? Evidently, this didn't send off any red flags. As much as they're listening in, NSA, the DOJ, the FBI, the CIA, apparently his search for how do you make a bomb out of fertilizer? Here's another one. How do remote detonators work? It was July 5th. These were Google searches a week before the assassination attempt. Jesse, as he says there, Trump hasn't come out as strongly as he did with Dr. Phil, saying basically you've got to put this on Biden and Harris. They denied me. Donald Trump is surely the most hated man worldwide, or at least he has the largest number of people who hate him. And so when his campaign, if you're really a patriot trying to lead the country and just do what's right, if the Trump campaign says, hey, we need to beef up our security, then you accept that request. Instead, Joe Obama says, no way. No, it's going to make you look more important. It's going to make your entourage look bigger. We can't do that. We got to beat you. You got to be eliminated. So they deny him that extra security, just like they deny RFK that security now, because they're on the bad side and they must be destroyed. Well, I had some other clips to run through, but this from the New York Post. Why would-be Trump assassin Thomas Crooks remains an infuriating enigma weeks after shooting. We just don't know anything about the shooter. We just can't get to the truth. We just can't understand what the policies are, what the agenda is. It's all so murky and muddled. And that's just the way the devil wants it. He's hard at work, trying to obscure any and all truth, trying to bury it. We're very familiar with those tactics from our adversary. We were up close and personal with it. between 1997 and 2003 when we were fighting to keep Mystery of the Ages alive, to keep it in circulation, to keep it in print. I wish I could keep going. The fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you next time.